Thank you for listening to the Sub Rosa News Program. This is Dan Galready. Thanks for taking the time to listen to our program today. On this edition of Sub Rosa News, we have a recording of a discussion between progressive activist David Hogg and progressive Democratic congressional candidate Ms. Mai Vang, who is challenging long-term Democratic incumbent Doris Matsui for California's 7th Congressional District, which is in the Sacramento area of Northern California. Ms. Vang currently is a member of the Sacramento City Council and is challenging Ms. Matsui, who has served in Congress for 21 years. If the name David Hogg is familiar, he was a student at the 2018 Parkland High School shooting in Parkland, Florida. After surviving the shooting, Mr. Hogg became a gun control activist. He also became involved with the Democratic National Committee, but had a serious falling out with leadership. This discussion was held in Elk Grove, California, before an audience of Vang's supporters on Saturday, May 9th, 2026, at the Seat at the Table bookstore. Vang and Hong discuss what they characterize as the do-nothing Democratic Party. To read more about this discussion and see some videos, visit elkgrovenews.net.
David Hogg, a warm welcome from Congressional District 7. This is my first time meeting David as well. But first of all, David, welcome to Congressional District 7. Welcome to the city of Elk Grove. Quick shout out to Emily, the owner of A Seat at the Table, as well. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for holding the line. Thank you for your leadership. And also, thank you for endorsing our race for Congressional District 7. So, I know this is going to be a casual Q&A, but I have a lot of questions. And I also know that all of our volunteers, supporters, residents in Congressional District also have questions as well. So I'm going to also allow an opportunity for the audience to ask questions. So really, this is just an opportunity for us to get to know you more. I mean, I think we've seen you on social media, we've seen you on CNN, we see the work that you're doing. And I know that we're in this moment, especially in this moment during troubling times in our country. Now more than ever, we need leaders who can meet the moment. We need leaders that we deserve. And so, you know, before we go into a little bit about your bio and who you are, I actually want to ask you, what was the moment that spurred for you, the moment that you decided I needed to create an organization to elect the next generation of leaders in this country?
Yeah, well, first of all, can we please give a round of applause to Mai again? To Emily for having you all here. So Leaders We Deserve got started when it's kind of a funny story. So I was in my freshman year of college, and I needed to hire somebody at March for Our Lives to take over my role because I needed to focus on my classes and go to therapy too. And I called up my friend, Max, and I said, hey, I really would love for you to take this job at our organization to help lead our work, and he told me no. And then the next day, in case you probably don't know this, but I have pretty severe dyslexia. Unless you've read any of my tweets, then you probably know. And I did not do too well on a Spanish test, and I called Maxwell the next day, and I said, you don't understand, I really need you to take this job. He said, fine, I'll take it. Maxwell took that job. He helped us pass dozens of gun laws around the country, helping to organize students all over the place. And then he called me up my junior year, and he said, David, I have good news and I have bad news. The bad news is I am leaving March for Our Lives, and I said, it's okay, I passed my Spanish class. And he said, and the good news is I'm running for Congress. And I said, Maxwell, you know that you're 24, right? You have to be 25 to be elected to Congress. He said, yes. Thankfully, I'm better at math than you are at Spanish. And I will be 25 by the time I'm elected. And I had never supported anybody running for office up until this point in any substantial way, because there were so many people after Parkland, after the shooting at my high school, where it was just we felt like we were political props for people of like, oh, let me take a picture of the Parkland kids and like say like I'm good on guns and then continue to fail this generation. We wanted people to endorse the movement instead of the movement having to endorse people. But with Maxwell, I didn't see him as a politician. I saw him as a friend and a real organizer that had done the work to help prevent gun violence in the country. And I saw how hard it was for him to get elected. And as I was working on his campaign, I was also meeting with the White House over Zoom from my dorm room, pushing them to create this thing called the Office of Gun Violence Prevention that I got given the runaround of all the reasons why it shouldn't be created, why it wasn't needed, even though President Biden had committed to that on the campaign trail. And Maxwell, despite having two former members of Congress running against him, one of whom was a hedge fund manager, and the other had committed tax fraud while they were in Congress, both of whom were Democrats, he ended up winning to become the first Gen Z member of Congress. And after he was elected, his first piece of legislation was to create the Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Within a year, I went from protesting outside the White House to hold them accountable to their commitments and meeting with them and given the runaround of all the reasons it couldn't happen, to watching now Congressman Maxwell Frost introduce the President of the United States for the announcement of the creation of the Office of Gun Violence Prevention. And this office coordinated in the past 250 years of American history, there has never, up until that point, been a single office or group whose job it is to coordinate the federal government's response just to gun violence. And that was the job of this office, because there's billions of dollars of resources out there that are just not being actively deployed and used as effectively as possible to combat gun violence, and that's what that office did. And that office then oversaw the two largest one-year reductions in gun homicide in American history. To this day, compared to our peak back in 2020 and 2021, gun violence has been cut by about one-third, which is pretty great. And you're not gonna hear about that on the news because you're not gonna hear about the shootings that don't happen. But after Maxwell's elected, I said, this is great, but we need way more people like Maxwell to be elected. People like yourself, Mike, who have done the work in their communities to serve them, to protect students like you've done on the school board with the Safe Haven Resolution, and so much more. And elect not just younger versions of the same corrupt people that are there right now, but elect young people that show that there is a difference between the Democratic and the Republican Party, and there is a party that actually does stand up against special interests, and there are candidates in that party, even if there are Democrats that are out there that are taking corporate money, that young people can see, well, there's candidates like mine, there's candidates like Maxwell and others, we're standing up against the special interests that have all made our lives so much harder. Because we're constantly seeing, you know, all the culture war issues and everything like that divide people, and instead it leaves out the fact that everybody across the board, their lives in this country are getting worse consistently. Rents are going up, pay is stagnating, and our lives are consistently harder. And I wanted to help bring in that generation of young people like Maxwell and tell them you actually can get elected, and doing the right thing actually is politically beneficial at the same time, because there's groups like Leaders We Deserve that can come in and really back you and help support you. And that's why we created Leaders We Deserve, to be like Emily's List, but for young progressive Democrats running for state legislatures, Congress, and sometimes things like mayor of New York City. Yeah. So, yeah.
And you're absolutely right about the Democratic Party really suck right now. Like, we suck a lot. Yeah. So,
for now.
So let's talk a little bit about the Democratic Party. I am a Democrat. I am not endorsed by the Democratic Party in California. But let's talk a little bit about the Democratic Party in this moment. You know, you ran and won the chance to be vice chair of the DNC. Obviously, it didn't go as planned. But I wanted to ask you, what were you actually hoping to accomplish? And given that you were pushed out, literally, how would you describe how the party is doing now? And where they need to go?
Well, what I wanted to do, and the reason why I ran, was, you know, I tried to do everything I could to communicate inside of the campaign of what was President Biden and then Kamala Harris's campaign to talk about what they needed to do to reach young people more. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of young people turned away from the Democratic Party, because it turns out when you tell people, you know, when people come to you and they say that there are atrocities that are happening in Gaza, and then you tell them, no, there aren't, and then they tell you that prices are too high, and you say, no, they aren't, and then they tell you that the president is too old, and you say, no, he's not. If you tell people not to believe their eyeballs and wallets, you're going to lose them, even with several billion dollars in advertising, right? And when I went to the first, there's public meetings of the DNC. Highly recommend not going. But there was a public meeting, because think about, the way I thought about it is that who would I be to constantly criticize the Democratic Party and say it sucks in all these ways if I didn't actually try to fix it myself and be part of the solution, right? It is so easy to go out there and say these institutions are terrible, they're never gonna work, and all these other things. That's the easy part. But real leadership comes from actually trying to change things and be the change that you wanna see. So I went to a DNC executive committee meeting of about 40 people where they're talking about why we lost the elections. First thing they bring up in, from their pollster is 18 to 29 year old voters. And I look around that table and I don't see a single person under the age of 40 at that table. And I saw an opportunity for me to be part of the change that I want to see, because was I the biggest fan of the DNC? No. But I wanted to see if I could actually be part of the solution. So I ran for that position to tell people what they needed to hear and not just what they wanted to hear. And I did the work. I called up all the DNC members. There's 450 people that you have to call basically nonstop for several months trying to get their support. It is a real election. And the reason why I ran for it is because I wanted to be in the rooms to say, actually, you know, for example, when we were talking about the autopsy, I brought up, you know what we should talk about, guys, is maybe part of the reason why we lost young voters was the fact that they were protesting against us on tons of college campuses saying we are actively complicit in the genocide, and we told them, no, we aren't, don't believe what you're seeing. And being able to be in those rooms and say those things obviously is really important. Now, obviously, the autopsy is not being released, despite Chair Martin running on that. But I wanted to be part of that change. And it became very clear to me in the DNC that it was not going to be enough for us to change our messaging as a party. And the reason why I think we focus so much on messaging and we hear people talk about it is, one, it's really profitable for the consultants that talk about messaging. And two, it's because you can change what you are saying instead of who you actually are and what you actually value a lot of the time. And I think as a party, I looked around that room and I looked at the current state of the party and I realized it's not gonna be enough for us to just change what we're saying. We actually need to change who we are. And that's why we announced what we were doing at Leaders We Deserve, to bring in a new generation of candidates. And the fundamental difference of what was happening at the DNC was that I believe that we need to do more than just change what we are saying as a party, that we need to fundamentally change who we are and bring in fresh blood. When voters rejected us in mass for somebody like Donald Trump again, that is a sign that we have to change who we are as a party, and I was ready to force that, even if it meant me losing my position at the DNC, because ultimately, I'm not here for ceremonial titles and positions like that at the DNC. I'm here to actually get stuff done and make sure that what happened in Parkland never happens to any other community ever again.
Thanks, David. Change starts from the bottom up, even though we didn't get the endorsement of the California Democratic Party.
You don't need it.
Yeah. you know, power really starts with the people on the ground. And in a campaign like this, I also wanted just to ask you, you've been all across the country supporting candidates. What are some lessons learned that we can learn here in Sacramento and Elk Grove in this congressional race? What have you seen, especially because we're in the midterms now, we are 24 days away from the June primaries. What have you seen from other congressional races that you think is so critical in this moment for our campaign, for candidates that Leaders We Deserve support? What is just the winning message for the winning strategy for us to be able to take back our country?
Well, for one, it's that challenging incumbents is very hard, but when you have somebody who is genuinely done a pretty bad job, like Doris Matsui, and you have a candidate who is pretty stellar, you do have an opportunity. And what I can tell you is that in races like this, oftentimes they can come down to several thousand votes. There was a primary election earlier this year that was decided by 1,200 votes in North Carolina. It was because Hakeem Jeffries and his super PAC came in with the help of Anthropic's super PAC with $2 million 6 days before the election. That election was decided by 1,200 votes. That means, the people in this room, if you guys go out and canvass, despite not being paid, right? but you're actually doing it for the right reasons. If you go out there and knock on the doors, the people in this room literally can be the difference in this election. I would not be here right now if there was not a real pathway to victory in this race. What I can tell you is that there's a lot of frustration and people are sick and tired of the status quo, but we need to channel that anger productively, because if we can help defeat an incumbent like Doris Matsui, somebody who literally took a max out check, the maximum legal amount that she can take from AIPAC, we can send a clear message that standing with AIPAC, standing with the Israel lobby is a major liability. It is not a political asset to you, because the American people are sick and tired of sending billions of dollars to a country that does not share values with us because they're actively complicit in a genocide and committing a genocide. And that shouldn't be controversial. But what that means is that there's going to be a lot of money spent in support, as we're seeing, of Doris Matsui. But you all can be the difference in making up for that. So what we lack in money, we have to make up for in people. And that's why I'm so glad that you all are here in that. I just want to say, we can win this race. Yes. It is possible.
Yes. We really see the pool, and we can. There is a pathway.
And I'm reminded a lot of something that I asked a few years ago. I was at a protest with Dolores Huerta, and I asked her, what's the most important thing that you can tell people that are involved in change and activism that you can do as an activist? And she said, it's not a matter of whether or not people say it's something is possible. It's a matter of whether or not you can make them believe it's actually possible. And I know that with this kind of support, that people really do believe that it is possible in this room and outside of it. I went on a run that was 4 miles longer than I had planned this morning, and I ended up, I can tell you, I saw one political sign, and it was not for Doris Matsui, it was for you.
We are in the middle of the midterm election, and something I've been telling my team and just our volunteers is that some of these seats that have been won by progressive, they've been open seats. I think our seat, particularly in California, this would be the first seat, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nayarka, the first seat, if we're able to make top two, where we're actually challenging an incumbent, because most of these seats have been open. And I share that because, and I'm so grateful for the support of Leaders We Deserve, because I do believe that when we win and when we make top two, or there's a pathway of also knocking her out, Nayarka just winked at me, that we are going to send a message throughout this country that change is possible, and that good leaders are leaders who know when to pass down the torch. And so I want to ask you, David, because you've been around, again, I share with you, you've been around the country, is like, what keeps you grounded in this work? What keeps you hopeful in this work, especially in this political climate? What keeps you hopeful and going?
What keeps me hopeful is the fact that, the fact that you all are here right now. There's many other places that you could be on a Saturday morning, and the fact that you're here is a great sign. Like, I can tell you, I've worked on many, many campaigns. The fact that every seat in this room is filled right now is a really good sign. It shows how much people believe in you, and that gives me a lot of hope. It's really our candidates that give me hope. It's candidates as well, like, you know, people that are not just running right now, but have been elected in the past year, like Zoran, for example, right? You know, when we were supporting him in his primary, I went to make a video with him in Washington Square Park, and I have never seen a candidate get mobbed by teenagers before. that came up to him with a genuine set. You know how hard it is to make teenagers actually believe in anything, right? The fact that they had a genuine sense of hope in their eyes, that gives me a real sense of hope. That the young people in this country that feel like they've been let down so much throughout their lives because they have done everything our parents told us. This generation has some of the lowest rates of teen pregnancy, some of the lowest rates of alcoholism, some of the lowest rates of drug abuse, some of the highest rates of college education, and yet we still find ourselves in a worse place oftentimes than our parents. The fact that young people can look to somebody like that and have actual hope in their eyes really makes me hopeful. Meeting you all and seeing the excitement around your campaign makes me feel a similar way, and that's what keeps me grounded in it. It's the everyday people and Americans that are standing up against the crazy amount of money in our politics that gives me a real sense of hope, because at Leaders We Deserve, we back candidates that are not taking corporate money, and that obviously has the cards stacked against them, but as Americans, we're going to have to continue to show up over and over and over again to prove that taking corporate money is a much bigger liability than it is an asset to you. And that's what you all are doing in this race. So that's really what gives me a sense of hope. But I'm also really scared, to be honest with you, for the future of this country. We are facing a massive youth unemployment problem right now that people are not really talking about, where many recent college grads even have not been able to get a job. And you know, part of it, obviously, I'm sure has to do with artificial intelligence, but I think it actually has to do far more with Trump's idiotic economic policy, the tariffs that have made interest rates go higher. I could go all into this, but I'm not going for you with it. But the bottom line is, there is a better pathway forward for the future of this country, but that's going to rely on us building a Democratic Party that is not loyal to special interests like AIPAC, or the defense industry, or the arms industry, that are making billions of dollars off of this genocide, but are loyal to the people in this room. Loyal to the people that are out there that don't have the time to even go and knock doors, which I'm very thankful for that you guys are able to be clear. That is who we need to be loyal to, who we need our members of Congress to actually be supporting. And that's why Leaders We Deserve exists, to help back candidates like that and show that there can be real support and a real groundswell of momentum. I think people mistake a lot of the time that our politics are simply just left-right, and I think increasingly it's top-down, right? It's, are you with the people or are you with the special interests that are funding both sides of the political aisle in Washington? We need to show young people especially that there is a group of Democrats that are not funded by the same corporations that have made your life suck, that are actively making billions of dollars off of the genocide and are constantly making our lives so much harder.
Yeah, I often share on the campaign trail with my team is that when an elected is funded by a corporate credit card, they got debt to pay.
Yeah.
That's just the honest truth. And they're not gonna move with a sense of urgency on fighting for Medicare for all,
no.
On stopping endless wars. Right, and so that's one of the reasons why we are running for Congress, so I cannot do this alone, but that's the reason why we don't take any corporate PAC money, and we do need to get money out of politics.
Absolutely. That's one of the ironies of the work that I do, is that every organization I've ever helped to found has a terrible business model, and that its goal is to not exist anymore. It is a bit ironic.
We should work ourselves out of our jobs.
Right. I'm not going to lie. It is kind of ironic that I'm sitting here telling you money is a big problem in politics, and I run a super PAC. You know, but the bottom line is, we're not taking corporate money at Leaders We Deserve, and we're funded by 250,000 individual small-dollar donors that support our work, that never could call me up and never are going to call me up to say, oh, we need a candidate to vote this way on this piece of legislation or something like that. Because people give to us because they genuinely want to support candidates like yourself. So I'm just glad that you had the courage to run in the first place, because there's so... I can tell you, I'm sure there are so many people that when you called, you know, political insiders and like people within these institutions, that when you told them like, hey, I think I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna primary somebody, we're like, are you crazy, right?
Yeah.
And it takes so much courage to do that. And I just hope you know how much that means to the people in this room, that you're willing to do that and how hard it is. But there are so many people out there that believe in changing the system and challenging the status quo. And it's only going to be because of candidates like yourself having the courage to do that in the first place, and people like you all to back candidates up like that, that we're going to get to a better place.
Thanks, David. It's like you already knew like the beginning of the story before I ran. You're absolutely right. I think when we made a decision to run, and I keep saying we, I did go to those political consultant that's been in this region for a while that had supported our campaign, and they have said, one, yes, don't do it. I've also had advice from folks that have supported me saying, well, if you don't like what she's doing, you know, why don't you just speak with her and help her become a better congresswoman?
Or she could retire.
Right.
And if she doesn't, I think it's time we force her to retire. Right?
No one's entitled to a seat in Congress. That seat belongs to the people, so we're going to let the voters decide.
Yep. I think part of what you're doing is so important too, because we have to change the culture in the Democratic Party that says it is absolutely unacceptable to challenge incumbents at all. That's ridiculous, right? These are not lifetime appointments. This is not the Supreme Court. Thank God. This is Congress. And if we're going to have a situation where there are so many congressional seats in this country that have never actually been competitive in over 100 years, many of them. If we're going to continue to have that, and we're going to say that we're really a party that wants to support democracy, guess what? We need to practice what we preach. And especially in a state like California with Prop 50 and everything going through, primaries are going to be basically the only elections for the foreseeable future. And I believe that the best way to make our party better is to help challenge more of those incumbents, especially in safe seats where it's not going to go to a Republican. Because we see when there is somebody who does successfully defeat an incumbent, it is so hard to do that that usually the incumbent truly sucked.
Right.
And the person who is defeating them has to be not just like as good as the person they're defeating, they have to be a mile above them in terms of their competence, their values. And we see, I mean, imagine a world right now where we didn't have AOC in Congress, right? She went against the person who was next in line, likely to be Speaker of the House. She had the same people, I'm sure, telling her, don't do this, it's a terrible idea, don't do it, don't do it. Imagine where we would be right now if she didn't run, of how much worse we would feel like we suck, right? So I'm so glad that you're taking part in that tradition and really breaking the mold of the Democratic Party to make it better.
Thanks. Thank you so much. All right. I want to make sure that we have an opportunity for Q&A. This is a casual conversation between me and David, but it's really a conversation with all of us. And so we'll open it up to the Q&A and see if folks have any questions. I know there's some questions out there.
Silence.